We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Are you crying?
No.
Are you crying? Are you crying? There's no crying. There's no crying in baseball.
You think football is still fun?
Yes.
Sir?
Yes, no.
No?
Sir, it was fun.
Not anymore, though, is it? Is it?
No, not right now.
No, it's not fun anymore, not even a little bit.
Just look at that, he hit the ball. Guy gets a free steak. You having fun yet?
Oh, yeah, I'm having a blast. Thanks.
Good.
All right, welcome back to Big Screen Sports, a podcast where all movies are sports movies. I am your host, Kyle Bandujo. And we have a patron selection coming at you this week. The patrons, I will say, the movies they have voted in for March are incredible. Kicking off with Jurassic Park. It's me, it's Caroline Darney, Ryan Nanny talking about a perfect movie. But before we get into it, I want to shout out our Big Chill producer-level patrons. That is Aaron Figueroa, Mike Schubert, Steve Rogers, Kevin Frost, Mike D, Ryan Yeager, Mike Dries, Chris Mikoski, John Craig, Sam Smith, Zach Rich, Class City Fire, Jason Alva, Stephen DeBoe, Dan McFall, Kevin Inkelman, Mac Lindsay, Kurt Ritchie, Robert Dove, Andrew Teagle, Benjamin Bauman, Jeff Esses, Anthony Scafone, and Taylor Logan. Biggest thanks to them and all of our patrons for supporting this show and for voting in an absolutely dynamite slate. For the month of March, we have three great episodes to finish out the month. If you want to support the show, if you want to help nominate and vote in movies for the show to cover, if you want to participate in monthly live watches, go to patreon.com/bigscreensports. With that, let's dive right into it. This movie rips. It's me, Caroline Darney, and Ryan Nanny talking Jurassic Park. All right, joining me on today's episode of Big Screen Sports, two experts on DNA and cloning from For the Win. It is Caroline Darney from the Shutdown Fullcast and We're Not All Like This, Ryan Nanny. Guys, thank you so much for bringing your expertise on this episode of the show.
Dino DNA!
Finally, I can use my amphibian DNA background.
I just want to get this out of the way. This is a text we got from Caroline in our group chat. About, I don't know, 40 minutes before we recorded this. I just had a thought that I don't think I can even say on the pod because y'all will roast me so hard. My question is not, what is the thought? My question is, why would you suggest that you have something and then not expect us to bring it up?
I started to think it and then I was going to say it. And then
I will offer a solemn promise. Kyle doesn't have to do this, but I will. If you will share the thought, I will say nothing. I will say no words.
I'll do the same thing. I will do the same thing. I will just stand here straight faced.
When they showed the Velociraptor in the kitchen as the kids are running out, I literally thought, I was like, look, I'm gonna say it. Raptors are kind of sexy. It's a handsome dinosaur.
Well, that's all for this episode.
Yeah, I was about to say, I appreciate it. Make sure to subscribe, rate, review.
You can't tell me that that is not a sexy.
Join the Patreon if you want to fund more of that.
Caroline, I have great news. I don't want to explore this at all.
Nope, I'm fine.
I don't want to roast you. Right, I want to pretend this never happened.
Part of it. No part of it.
No.
I have no idea what to say. I don't know where to go.
You could have given me 100 guesses I never would have landed on. Ooh, these raptors too sexy.
Game's too strong. I mean, it's in the sense of like, you know, when that Robin Hood Disney movie came out, the fox with the foxes.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
Not the same. It's not the same.
Those are anthropomorphic creatures that are supposed to have like human characteristics. These are supposed to be realistic dinosaurs.
Too realistic.
These raptors are not walking around in dresses with huge badonks. Like,
I'm not proud of this. I'm
these
just
raptors
saying,
don't have the yams.
The handsome dinosaur.
Oh man. Well, Kyle, you get to take it from here, bud. I'm so sorry that I've
welcome to the Jurassic
detonated
Park
the episode. Jesus,
man. Man,
I hate this movie now.
I want to shout out the Patreon group for voting this movie in to be covered and unlocking what was just said on this show.
Man.
We have really hit a new level. Ryan, what's going on at the full cast in the next season of We're Not All Like This?
Honestly, nothing even remotely as weird as that. We're Not All Like This is coming back the second week of March. I don't know when this will come out, but it'll be probably around that time. Virginia was not on my list of schools that we're going to cover, and it won't be now because I can't risk bringing Caroline on and asking her normal questions and getting this in response. Are you kidding
me? What about like We're Not All Like This fans of Velociraptors?
I didn't. All right. Like to try to steer this somewhere back on course. I feel, and I am the oldest one here, I feel like Velociraptors were not a dinosaur in the public consciousness until this movie / this book.
Yes.
Like this, they were not like Stegosaurus, yes. T-Rex, absolutely. Ankylosaurus, love those guys with their weird tails. Yep. Velociraptor had so much extra PR off of this, that they have just continued
the glow
to
up
just
for the Velociraptor.
I'm not going to call it the glow up because that has a suggestion I'm not comfortable with. But in terms of their Q rating, the before and after Jurassic Park for raptors is just amazing, like an amazing piece of work. That's
they're
all.
A political consultant's dream.
100%
unlimited approval ratings.
Yes, yes.
They have the hippo, the same PR people as hippos.
I don't think hippos are as popular as dinosaurs are.
No, I just mean hippos have great PR considering the facts that they're murder beasts. Like people are like, look at these hippos. Like I think it's getting a little bit more realistic that people know that hippos murder more people every year than like lions.
Yeah, but I think zoo YouTube channels have done a lot for hippos, sure, as has the game Hungry Hungry Hippos.
Yeah, like Fiona showing up on my timeline all the time was like, look at Fiona, the little baby hippo is. Like it will eat you.
Carolyn, what's going on at For the Water Cooler?
All sorts of stuff. We just had a great episode. Jess Matana came on. We had a blast talking about Love is Blind. And then Matt and I talked about Dune 2 for about 35 minutes until we had to cut that off. If you haven't seen Dune 2 yet, go see it. There are spoilers in this episode.
Is that possible? Like, I feel like anything that could happen in Dune 2... If you're, unless you're like, I have no idea what happens in Dune. Like
that was me. I mean, I never read the book.
Okay.
And so there's a reveal like 3/4 of the way through that I audibly gasped.
Sure.
And so, that was a very clear indicator in the audience, like who had and had not.
Okay.
Because it was the guy sitting next to me. It was so I went to Alamo, reserved seats, whatever, and there were two seats, my seat, and then. Another seat next to me as the row continued. And these three guys came in and they had those three seats. Mm-hmm.
So did all three of them have the popcorn buckets?
No, popcorn? Alamo, so we didn't have the terrifying popcorn buckets. Watching the actors find out about those is some of my favorite reaction stuff. But
Austin Butler has been doing a great job on this press tour.
His stock is skyrocketing, but I offered to move if they wanted to all sit together, and they're like, well, have you ordered? And I was like, I ordered my popcorn. Whatever. So they're like, no, stay. I see them all the time. Like whatever. But the guy next to me was a hoot. He was so funny. Like not like talk during the movie funny, but there's a moment where a woman like wrangles a small sandworm and I don't know.
Like a baby hippo, like a Fiona the hippo.
I hate worms so much.
Oh, okay.
Like, I don't, they there's just, I ugh, it gives me the biggest creeps in the world. And so I said loud enough, I thought to myself, but I was like, oh my God, he was like dying laughing. And so there's definitely moments where you react to things that I hadn't seen that, you know,
spoiler, if you're not into Worms, don't go see Dune 2. No,
the big ones are gross, but they don't bother me as sure. much.
How do you feel about Tremors?
I don't watch that.
Don't subscribe to that.
I don't watch that. I had, when we studied like in biology in high school, when we did like a chapter on like worms and parasites, I was convinced I had all of them. Like, well, I've lost my appetite a little bit. I think I have a tapeworm. I think I have anxiety issues. So, yeah.
Well, this episode has started out just as normal as could possibly be. Just really by the book, normal movie podcast.
Actually, so wait, For the Win, I'll bring it back. We'll have Oscar stuff, tons of Oscar stuff. So it's this weekend. It's going to be fun. And so come check out all the pre, during, and post Oscars festivities.
What are we going to be maddest about at the Oscars this year?
Great question.
A lot of the big categories seem really locked up.
There's mm-hmm. going to be, I think the ones that are the closest is probably between Lily Gladstone and Emma Stone. Mm-hmm. And I haven't seen either of those. Those are on my list for the next couple of days. Because Poor Things is actually coming to Disney Plus. Weird combo?
Extremely weird. I need to prepare you that Killers of the Flower Moon is three episodes of 24.
I know.
And shot in the exact same way.
Real time, like, with a clock.
Old-timey clock.
Yep. Jack Bauer is actually a character Killers of the Flower Moon. He is the killer of the Flower Moon, actually.
Just spoilers, gosh. Mm-hmm. But I think either one, from what I've heard, is a...
A worthy choice.
Okay. There's none that I'm like, because I think RDJ is going to get it for Oppenheimer. I think Cillian Murphy is going to get it for Oppenheimer.
There'll be something that doesn't go the way. Like, you know, there'll be something that. I hear what Kyle's saying, but they never just give you, all the favorites won.
You're getting your Gosling I'm Just Ken performance that you're.
So getting. And apparently is 65. Backup Kens for the performance, which I could not be more excited for.
There will definitely be some famous Kens. Like they will cameo with famous Kens.
Yeah.
If that song that like if I think that the better choice for original song is the other Barbie song, the Billie Eilish one that's actually full of heart and emotion and the emotional centerpiece of the movie. But I would not be mad if I'm Just Ken one, because that was maybe my number one song on Spotify last year.
Of course it was.
Such a normal brain. Such a normal brain.
I think the ice cream.
What is wrong with me? What?
He said, I think the ice cream truck is outside. I can't hear it. Oh, he's leaving. All right. So, dramatically, look, here's what just happened. Kyle popped his headphones off and said, I think the ice cream. Oh, he's appearing back.
He's back.
I was like,
Mr. Softy is literally parked outside the house across the street from me.
So, you gonna go get one?
To go?
You know, I'm not. That would be incredible content.
But we are just waiting for Kyle to come back. We're going to take bets on
I was like, he's going to have a swirl with sprinkles. Yeah.
All right, we're 11 minutes in. I want to thank the patrons for voting in this movie, because tonight we are talking about the great sport of trying not to get eaten by dinosaurs. We're talking about Jurassic Park, the 1993 thriller. A pragmatic paleontologist touring an almost complete theme park on an island in Central America is tasked with protecting a couple of kids after a power failure causes the park's clone dinosaurs to run loose. Stars Sam Neill, Laura Dern, and Jeff Goldblum. It's directed by Steven Spielberg, written by Michael Crichton and David Koepp, based on a novel by Crichton. Somehow only at 92% on Rotten Tomatoes, this movie overall has grossed $1.058 billion with a B. 914 in its original run in 93.
That's unbelievable.
Incredible. Mm-hmm. Incredible. And Caroline, before recording, I was telling you, this is somehow the first Steven Spielberg movie we've done on the show, which seems hard to believe.
A lot of misses from Spielberg, you know, notoriously not
tough career.
Real low points. Now it's that's kind of surprising. When are we doing E.T.?
When I kick this like flu type sinus infection, because I gotta be like emotionally stable for that. We will never do AI artificial intelligence ever. But Ryan, is this on your your Spielberg Mount Rushmore?
This is on my movie Mount Rushmore. Like, yep. And some of that, I try to remember with movies like this that I saw this when I was 10 years old in a movie theater. I believe we were on a family vacation and we stopped in some like town that had a theater with two screens. One of them was playing something rated R that my parents were like, nope. So they were like, okay, 10-year-old me and my 8 and 6-year-old siblings. My sister was 6 when she saw this live.
Kid friendly option.
Yeah. They were just like, we're going to do this. And it is probably the first time I remember thinking like, holy shit, this is what going to the movies can be like. I had been to the movie theater before, but this was the first time I was like truly like transported and felt like I was seeing the impossible. I try to look at it in the lens of like, okay, well, not everybody saw it when they were 10 on a family vacation and in this incredibly impressionable way, but like, having seen it again on television, again in the theaters, like, it holds up so well. Like, it holds up so, so well. I would say it is probably one of my 5 favorite movies of all time.
Yeah.
This movie is now over 30 years old, and it mm-hmm. is, like, it is plug and play. It is legitimately a perfect movie. Like, the score, the pacing, the scenes that you look forward to, the effects, the scenes that you look forward to, like movies. Caroline, we did a lot of the same kind of conversation when we did Alien, and how that has aged really, really well. This, I think, even to an even better degree, because there are some things in Alien where you're just like, oh, that's 1979. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's Ryan, I think you nailed it with like, this is what going to the movies can be. This is what movies can be. I feel like Spielberg did that so many times in his career.
Yes.
Like when Jaws came out, that's what that was. Raiders of the Lost Ark. Yep. That's what that Saving Private Ryan. This is what war movies can be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, the man, I don't want to say he does not miss, because he did direct The Terminal, which, wide right. But, I mean, looking at his, I was looking at his career before we started, and like Jaws in 76, he's got the Indy trilogy. This year, just in 1993, he's got Jurassic Park and Schindler's List. You mm-hmm. could make an argument that Jurassic Park isn't the best movie he made in 1993. I'll never watch Schindler's List again because it makes me deeply upset, but incredible film. You know, there's E.T., Saving Private Ryan. He does Catch Me If You Can in the early 2000s. All the, like, Munich, which is a movie that, like, me and a couple people talk about a lot. Like, mm-hmm. I love Munich. I thought the West Side Story remake was incredible. And then I thought, was The Fablemans last year or 2 years ago? Or something?
I think that's 2 years ago.
I love The Fablemans.
We just like, both said, like, confidently.
It doesn't matter. It wasn't this week. How about that?
But I mean, in terms of this one, I mean, think about it, it spawned 5 sequels now. Like, it's and they all, I guess the newer ones don't totally work, but like all 3 of the original work to a variable degree.
I hate all the sequels. All of
There are parts I like. In Jurassic Park 3, I specifically like the part where the kid tells Sam Neill that he read his book, and Sam Neill looks over and goes, did you read Ian's book?
is this where I jump in and talk about the books?
Sure. Wait. The books or the original book? Which one do you want to start?
The original book. Okay. So I will say, Michael Crichton is one of my probably top 2 favorite authors. I will read any and all Michael Crichton stuff. I've probably read most of it multiple times. This is by far my favorite book. I absolutely love this book. If you haven't read the book, I highly recommend it. I very much am of the generally, because I know I just talked about Dune, like I hadn't read the book. I'm actually listening to it now, and I'm glad I went that order, because now I understand what the hell they're talking about in Frank Herbert's Dune. Because if I hadn't done it the way that I did, I think I would have bailed out and been like, no clue what's happening.
Yeah, but sure.
Jurassic Park is such an incredibly well-written and interesting novel that goes into way more details that, you know, and that's what's so this is probably, in my world and things that I've seen, my favorite and maybe the best book
adaptation.
Yeah, because they don't hit everything, because it's a 2 hour and six, it's sorry, two, yeah, 2 hour, 6 minute movie, which I think is a, it's a great paced movie. It's a great runtime. They hit all the high points, but there's stuff, there's a few things that they change that I'm kind of like, it's not necessary, but like it works. So like the kids are swapped essentially. So like the older kid is the boy and the younger girl. And then they are not in a relationship in the book, but Sam Neill and Laura Dern's characters, so Dr. Salern. So that's like just, and that's not stuff that's like super important, but essentially everything that's in Jurassic Park 3, which is definitely terrible. Kyle, sorry, no offense.
No, I mean, it's bad. Don't get me wrong. It's very bad. Not
are the really
it's good.
Cool. They're, all of the that story is essentially the really cool set pieces from the book
that were left over.
It, that didn't make it into the, and they were all still really good set pieces. So when they end up on the river trying to get back to the control center, and they're trying to keep quiet, and the T-Rex comes in at various times, and there's the when the T-Rex gets them through the waterfall, and they go through the apiary or whatever it is with the pterodactyls, like that's all in the book that doesn't make it. And so, but I think that they do such a good job of like explaining these characters and making you care about them. Way more people die in the book too, by the way.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, so Ian Malcolm does not make it.
Yes.
John Hammond meets a very unfortunate demise in the most depressing way, as he stumbles down a hill, sprains his ankle, cannot get back up, and a group of compies, which are like tiny little like squirrel-sized dinosaurs.
Which I think are in the second movie, maybe.
It might be. Yeah. I've only seen that one like once or twice, like two or three times. But they,
that's from the hot Vince Vaughn era.
Yeah, it is.
They basically nibble him to death because they have like very slight poison in their like saliva, and so he does not make it out either. And they end up blowing up a raptor nest. Am I remembering this correctly?
I think that's right. I haven't read it in a long time.
Yeah,
but it's great. I remember Malcolm and Hammond die. So
yeah, so it's anyway, the book is great. I love it. This movie is fantastic. Like it just does such a wonderful job of bringing dinosaurs to life. Like it's just such a cool, like I'm always in awe of people that can write really good novels, because like just the thought process of being like, how could they bring dinosaurs back? Well, they need blood. Where would they find blood? Like the whole idea of like the amber, like as a kid, I saw it in the theaters as well. I think I was 8. I think I read the book when I was like 8, and like just absorbed all of it. There's a really cool scene in the book where they're in the like in the nursery, and there's still a couple raptors, one or two raptors, and Dr. Grant is like injecting the lysine or whatever it is into raptor eggs.
Yeah.
And like rolling them down the hallway for the raptors to eat and like poison. It's the way that Michael Crichton writes, I just absolutely love it. But I don't really love, but probably Lost World is probably my least favorite of the Crichton books, just because they bring Malcolm back to life randomly. Like that was, I was always like, why? What, you wrote the first one, it was your decision. Like I think the new trilogy or whatever, they're entertaining. I saw them in the theaters. Like, are they the best things ever made? Absolutely not. Did I get my free movie on my 1999 Alamo draft pass enjoyment out of it? Yes.
So I was trying to think about, like, why do I really dislike all of the sequels without reservation? And I think it's because the original sticks to the most satisfying version of the events, which is it treats the dinosaurs as animals. They're just animals. And the last three movies, the sequels with Chris Pratt, like, go way too far into this, but 2 and 3 do this a little bit as well. They start to get into like, well, what are the motivations of the dinosaurs? And like, how can we get inside their brains? And this movie doesn't do that at all. This movie is like, it takes the line that Alan Grant has about like, dinosaurs and man are two species that haven't coexisted. How can we possibly know what to expect? And it just sticks to that. Like, there is no point where we're sort of like, well, you know, we can, if we can convince the raptors to do, like, no, there's none of the, it's just, you are trapped with, well, it's Jaws. It's like, yeah, in many ways, it's the same thing of Jaws. It's like, nobody's like, well, why is the shark doing this? It's like, it doesn't matter. It's, these are wild animals that are doing, that are engaging in naturalistic activity. And I think that's what makes it satisfying. And the further they get from that to sort of be like, well, it's protecting its young and this, that, I'm just like, no, miss me with all of that. I don't want to see, I don't want to start to get into the mind of like, I've imprinted on this raptor and it means something. It's like, no, fuck all of that.
So you don't like Deep Blue Sea is what you're telling me.
Deep Blue Sea is, I would argue, a very different movie. That's successful in very different ways. Yes.
Why the sharks are doing what they're doing.
Same movie if you're Samuel L. Jackson. Though.
Correct. That's true.
Pretty much. Yeah.
He loses an arm in that movie too.
He loses a lot more than an arm.
In both of these movies, to be clear, the arm is actually the thing he keeps in this movie.
I love Deep Blue Sea.
This is the last thing I'm gonna say about the thing that Caroline said to open this episode.
Yeah.
I texted the screen grab of that from the group chat to Jacqueline. I said, you won't guess in a million years what this is a reference to. And she says, my guess is she's interested in someone she shouldn't be interested in. The billionaire, LOL. And I was like, no, not even close. And then I thought about it, and I was like, actually, kind of.
It's the one raptor.
Yeah.
What's true about this movie is the way that, like, the number of, watching it again today, like the number of GIFs that have come out that are like still.
This was like the source material for a lot.
Hold on to your butts.
Hold on to your butts. You've got them like showing up and like your head with them.
Sam Neill on the breathing Tyrannosaurus, the Triceratops, which turns into Sam Neill on Ian Malcolm.
Ian Malcolm with the shirt open.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The clever girl, you've got the breathing onto the, I love the meme where it's like me when the meeting in the like room in front, like person in front of me goes 2 minutes over and you're like standing in the floor of the office like, waiting for people to finish. It's just such a, it's held, that's the thing that I think that it's held up, and they do such a good mix of practical effects with very little
CGI,
and that makes all the difference in this time frame, because they there were a few obviously with like the Brontosaurus or whatever, Brachiosaurus, where they clearly have done some CGI work, but it's not overdone to the point where it's like, god, that did not hold up. Like
it's all blended, because the practical effects are all so good, they sort of get your buy-in for the CGI. like, yeah, you have seen so much quote-unquote real dinosaur that when you see, like, I saw this Tyrannosaurus Rex stick its nose through the top glass of the Jeep. Yeah. So when I see it eat the lawyer off the toilet, it doesn't feel jarring, at least in terms of what animal is that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, I think we could, this is a Hall of Fame movie. We don't really need to do that. The trivia is a rich text, so much so that I didn't really want to dive in. I knew we'd have a lot about this movie just to talk about. Two things, Caroline, I feel like, I'm sure you know this, and I feel like we've all talked about this before, you know how tall Michael Crichton is?
Oh, we have talked about this before.
Oh, isn't it, like,
why we talked about this,
I can't remember either.
I don't know why, but isn't he like 6'6"?
He's 6'9".
Yeah.
It's like Michael Crichton and Bin Laden, you're too you're sneaky tall one-on-one matchup.
he also was, am I remembering correctly, he also was a writer on ER.
Well, he created the series, I think.
Created the series?
Yeah.
He had himself... Look, I will recommend Timeline. Great movie. Great book.
Oh, boy. The
terrible
book.
That's
the
Paul
book,
Walker,
the book I can go with. The,
yeah,
the movie,
sorry. Terrible
bad.
Movie. Great book. Paul Walker was in that. That is correct.
So that's the other thing is that there are a lot of Michael Crichton books that have been adapted into movies.
Mm-hmm.
And the hit rate is not good.
No.
Like, that's the other thing that I think makes this impressive is, like, Congo... No, like Congo at least has some camp
great
value
book.
To it.
Yeah.
But like not a successful movie. Sphere.
Great book.
Terrible movie. Terrible movie. I know there's like the Andromeda Strain is great, I haven't book. Seen it, but I know it's supposed to be like a very good movie. It's you know, made in the 70s or 80s or something like that. But like Westworld was terrible. Yeah, sure. Did he do the 13th Warrior? Did I make that up?
That sounds right. I think he did that.
That also is a movie that like didn't really like land in any like. He doesn't make books that easily translate to like, oh, this will be a very successful movie.
And I think part of that is because he legitimately does a lot of science-y based research and details. So like,
sure.
He actually dives into, you know, the details around DNA and like learns about the stuff. And so and right. Same thing with like the time travel bit.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And so
which is stuff that's hard to it's stuff that's hard to explain. I think that's where this movie is really successful, is it does a really good job simply explaining this. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's why Grisham books always, like the movies always translate really well, because like he knows lawyering deep, but it's like lawyer shit, conspiracy, boom, we're good.
Yeah.
Like I think I like all the Grisham adaptations.
If they did like Timeline on like Max as a series, or Apple, oh god, Apple, please,
maybe
like I think that they could pull it off. If they it's hard to do into a 90 to 120 minute format to get all the details in, which is why I think they did such a good job on this one.
Yes,
that's why like Westworld, like season one of Westworld was fantastic, season two was pretty good, season three was like, what if Marshawn Lynch was in this show? And then that's when we got kind of off the rails.
But the other thing that I think makes Jurassic Park so great is like, yes, it's very science oriented or whatever, but it's in service of a super basic premise, which is like, wouldn't it be cool if we could make dinosaurs again? Like, yeah. It's not particularly highfalutin. And, you know, I think of a movie like Contact or something, where it's like, oh, well, we're talking about like the metaphysical relationship of man to the stars and this, that, and the other. And this is like, nah, man, we just want to see T-Rex. That shit is cool.
Yeah. So I didn't realize he also wrote and produced Twister.
Mm.
Oh.
Okay.
Love that. Love that for me personally.
Sure. Yeah.
But yeah, it's he's him and I'll geek out about the Ken Follett. I also love Ken Follett books, but also extraordinarily difficult. He's not one that you can put into film because his stuff is all like tomes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you end up with like A World Without End, or like what is the other one? The bigger one that well, anyway, it was a good podcast.
Kyle, did you see this in theaters? Have you seen this in theaters at any point?
I have not, which is a deep, like I was watching this. It's a regret in my life. So here's the thing. When it came out, I was two. So
sure. Seems fair.
That was a big issue. This is one that like when the next time, like I am now, I've gotten to the point where I am now scouring one of my local theaters will run back some old stuff that I am interested in. Because there are movies that I just desperately want to see in theaters that I did not get to see in theaters. I mean, I would put like, Carolyn, we talked about this during Avenger November, like the Avengers movies are right up there. Like whenever those come back in, I'm in. But this is one that I will break plans to go see because because part of what makes this movie incredible is the score and the scale of everything and the sound work. And it's like, you know, our TVs are the best they've ever been, but it just doesn't compare to being in a theater and having your seat shake.
You have not lived until you hear that T-Rex first scream, yell, whatever.
Howl. Yeah.
It's incredible. Like, that is like a core memory for me, seeing this. Because again, being so excited after loving the book and getting to go sit in the theater with my little thing of popcorn and like have the story come to life on screen and the way that they did it was incredible. And yeah
it's on my list. I would love to see it. There's one more piece of trivia,
like rent the theater.
It's funny enough, Jacqueline and I were talking about that, that our theater had been doing rent your own, like bring your own Blu-ray. We did it for one of Grayson's birthdays, and they've gone away from that, but if they ever bring it back, I was thinking like this would be a really good one for that, which is cool because I've been buying a bunch of Blu-rays, which is something that you guys have been making fun of me about. So
no.
Guess what? When bring your own Blu-ray happens, guess who's not getting invited? You two.
It's fine. I'll bring my own Blu-ray of Thor 2.
We'll not be watching it.
Right, what's your other piece of trivia?
Did you guys know that Jeff Goldblum and Laura Dern dated for 2 years after this?
I think I remember that being a thing. Yeah.
How could, I mean, that chemistry.
Clearly.
She saw him with that shirt and was like,
Goldblum is vibing in this movie. Vibing. Everyone came to Jurassic Park to see some dinosaurs. Jeff Goldblum came to find the only woman on the island and try to steal her from her man.
Correct.
Steal her from Sam Neill.
Yeah. And also, like, the shirt showing, like, the gratuitous chest and stuff like that. If Laura Dern had not been there, he would have just been around a bunch of dudes just showing the chest, which is...
He wouldn't have cared, though.
That's true.
Like, no. he would have 100%... He's a peacock.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
going
yeah.
to peacock no matter the circumstances.
Jeff Goldblum in The Life Aquatic deserved an Oscar. He's fantastic.
One of the funniest scenes in this movie is when very early when they're just arriving at the island and they're like, holy shit, there are dinosaurs. And he's in the Jeep and he's like muttering to himself. He's like, holy shit, you did it. You son of a bitch, you did it. And the driver just like turns and gives him this like, what's your fucking like, deal, dude? Like,
he's talking to me? Like, what
is this guy talking to himself?
I love this. Like, I feel like he's had this resurgence. Not that he went anywhere, but like, I think he deserved an Oscar for his work in Thor Ragnarok.
Yeah,
because
he's
that
great.
Shit was
hilarious. Really funny.
Like, did you say Asgard? And he's like, Asgard. Anyway, he's just so good. He's just decided to fully lean into
being Jeff Goldblum.
Every second. Yeah. And like, I don't like a lot. There, you know how you feel about it. There's certain commercials you like and you don't like. The Scoop, There It Is. Great commercial. That I
sure.
10 out of 10. Anything. I love the ones he does. I don't need an apartment. I don't know what it is. I vibe with it. Like, great. The one where he's talking to the two aliens that just arrived, like the new one. Have you seen that one yet? He's like, for one room? Two? I don't know what you might need. I love it. Like, just give me an hour of him talking to aliens about their living situation. Mm-hmm. Like,
Someone had that same thought and said, Jurassic Park 2, The Lost World. Like, that's what we're going to do.
That's
more
true.
More of this guy. Let's take a quick ad break and then get back with what worked.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Okay, we're back. Short category here. What worked about this movie? Anything? Ryan, anything? This is where, like, this category is legitimately too broad because there are things that work about this movie.
I'll pick a thing that I really like about this movie. There are no action heroes in it. Like, there are capable people, but, like, as much, I'm sure there was a temptation to sort of, like, the closest we get is Muldoon. Muldoon is the man of action in the movie. But Muldoon does not survive the movie, sorry if that's news to anyone, and is not the hero. Is it, like, he does some heroic things, certainly, but, like, the fact that we are taking, you know, a bunch of fucking science nerds who are not used to, you know, climbing in and out of trees in the jungle and evading predator. Like, they are so far out of their depth. And I find that very satisfying. It's very believable. Everything they do sort of, like, tracks with that. And it heightens the sense of peril because you never get the sense of, like, oh, they can outmatch their dinosaur opponents. It's like, no, they know a lot. But what they know is not that useful functionally. And they are just trying to survive. And I think like the decision to not have, both in terms of like who the characters are and who they cast, like
so good.
Sam Neill's a great actor.
I think it all starts with Sam Neill as that lead. Yes. If you're like, what, 93? If it's like Schwarzenegger is going to be the, you know, or someone like that, it's a completely different vibe, and it's the wrong vibe.
Or even like, you know, Keanu Reeves was playing like action scientists at this point. And like, it just wouldn't be the same because you're like, oh, it triggers something that you're expecting. And this movie doesn't try to do that. And I really
No, I'm
that.
Thinking of like a hungover Keanu a la Speed. Like, he's like, bro, there's dinosaurs, man.
Like, there is Ian like a whole, he's in a movie with Morgan. He's in a movie with Morgan Freeman where he's like an action scientist around this time.
Malcolm got it right.
What is that called? I'm going to look it up.
In 93?
No, you're right about
it's around this time. Keanu Reeves. Chain Reaction. It's from 1996.
Chain Reaction.
Yeah.
Never heard of it. He goes on like a skid after Speed, doesn't he? Like, doesn't he...
How dare you
go over a couple speed bumps before he gets things back on track?
Yeah,
he tries to take that bus over the jump. That's not
worked out. Worked out. Caroline, what else works about this movie?
I love the entire like the villains of this movie are not the dinosaurs. Like the dinosaurs are an added hurdle, but the villain of this movie is greed / it's Dennis Nedry. I mean there can
Ooh,
be
I disagree I disagree
can be an argument for John Hammond. Yes. John Hammond is the puppet master playing God trying to do
this
much.
Is when we see Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos and Mark Zuckerberg just generally being shitty folks. It could always be worse
but they've cast Richard Attenborough and he's so charming that it's so easy to forget that he is the problem with everything.
He's
that's
literally
happened
Santa
to you.
The year after this.
<That's right. laughs> And the thing is, too, that I firmly believe this, and it is very incorrect. But if you do a little bit better on background checks, like I think you open this park. If you don't hire Dennis Nedry.
It's the classic billionaire problem of he doesn't want to compensate his employees. Very, very valuable
also
employee.
True.
Like that also adds true. Up. I mean, this movie has a different vibe if he is an Elon Musk style billionaire where he's just generally unlikable. Yeah.
If he's a Bond villain.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's different because the grandkids wouldn't be there because none of Elon Musk's kids want anything to do with him. So that would be a different vibe. But
the non-starter.
Now, that said, Caroline, I think even if he, like, pays Nedry what he's worth and, like, has more than two computer employees.
Yes.
They still have not solved the problem of, like, oh, the dinosaurs are breeding. Like,
true.
It doesn't ultimately come into major play, but this thing was a time bomb either way.
Oh, yeah.
I'm actually surprised that they decided to include that part in the movie only because, again, not to be the person like in the book, but in the book, there's an incredible sequence where he finds the eggs, figures out that they're dinosaurs,
that they're breeding.
And when they get into contact, there's a great moment of them, like, they're only new because they're like, no, all of our accounts are accurate every single time we get the what? And they're like, because you're looking for what you expect.
Yeah.
You're looking for 55 compies. What happens if you change that number to 100?
Right.
And then they get 79 compies and like, well, that's not possible, how did that happen? So they have this great scene of them figuring out in the control room that what has been the problem with that way of thinking is the narrow scope looking for what you find. It's just really interesting. Like, I know I'm a dork, but like it's so cool, it's so well done. So I'm actually kind of surprised they included that bit just because like they don't really go into it in this one. Like, there's no real reason to be like, oh, they were breeding because of the frog DNA and they can be, you know, any gender they want based on, or should say any sex that they need to be in order to keep the species
population
going.
Growing.
So,
They so limit it to like two sentences pressure. From Sam Neill, but the movie is still, they make it very easy to understand. The little park ride that has, you know, the dino DNA like that. It's like, got it from bugs. cool. Like, we're this is all we need to know. There were maybe like,
wouldn't you believe that that was a ride at Epcot?
Oh, for sure. I mean, that's yeah, that's like living with the land or something. Like, that's
that's
right up there. I mean, it's just,
here's Ellen to explain how dinosaurs are made.
She comes dancing in
when he's talking to him on screen. It's like you've seen something like that a million times at a million different amusement parks, but that's where it's like, someone, at least one person, raised the question of, like, there's already the question of, should we be doing this at all? Should we be creating velociraptors? I think, like, you can't even see them because they're in this top secret paddock.
So
yeah, they're so dangerous that we can't even lay eyes on them. Financially, why? Uh-huh. Like, that's
ambition.
Tough.
Ambition is just the answer, right? Like, yeah.
And so Nedry, as the like villain that you can point to more easily, is so perfect and so easy to root against him. From he eats up every single second that he is on screen, and that is
that's
like,
kind of the Wayne Knight special, though.
Yes, from the like, hey, Dobson's over here. Look, oh, we got a bat. Like, nobody cares. Like, another great line that has like stood the test of time.
Yeah,
but he's just so. The entire plot is so fascinating. Like, it's such a, and like, there's just something that always stuck with me about that Barbasol shave container. Any like,
which you can buy one of those at the Container Store.
Like, one that holds things.
Yeah,
holds 100%. Dino
DNA. That holds. Yeah, you can buy a fake Barbasol, like a fake shaving container at a store. Yeah, you can do that.
Man, I didn't know that. Also, anytime I think of Barbasol, I think of that Clean Shave America commercial that used to play on the Big Ten Network. Do you remember
Close
that?
Shave America. Close Shave Barbasol. Marketing works.
Then he says, like, America looking tall, handsome, and free, or something like that.
And what how much is he making to do that for this on the
show? Isn't it
1.5 million? Yeah,
which is like,
so he's only at what, 750 K in the bag that he gets from Dobson. Look at this badass.
Right.
And then he said it's 50,000 per viable embryo, and so that would, if he got all of them, it would be 1.5 million.
1.5.
Which, this goes into, what was the movie we did, Kyle?
Ocean's like, 11. I'm literally looking at the inflation calculator right now of what this would be in 2001.
Thank you for saving me.
100% not worth it is what the answer is.
Because if Dennis Nedry pulls this off, not only is he not work, he can't work ever again.
No.
He has to, like, live in hiding forever.
Yeah.
Yeah. The plan, like, realistically, and I know that the weather threw everything off, but the plan was not great. Was not well executed in the fact that if he had just done it in some sort of quick way before, one, when they weren't running tests with guests there, and two, when he was just normally going to be going to the boat to like get on it to leave, because now, like you said, he can never work again because they know these stalls and like shut down the.
He's doing this for $3.2 million in today's dollars.
That's not
enough. Getting
pay,
he's
That's
getting paid
enough.
Like a fourth round strong safety, and needing that
not
to last
enough.
Forever.
Damn.
For dinosaur DNA, like, it's just not enough. Like, it's at least got to be in that time frame, at least double digit.
100x.
Yeah.
Well, because he says they're catching up on 10 years of work in one, like, in one foul swoop.
Yeah.
Nedry, bad negotiator.
Yeah.
Horrible negotiator. He, every single thing he did was so dumb. It was perfect.
But we find out that he's bad with money, though. Like, that's why he's in this predicament. Is he's gotten himself into some financial trouble. That John Hammond is like, got two people that this park really hinges on with the computers. I'm going to make sure that one of them stays really pissed and gives me every reason to take money on the side to do a bad job.
This is like background check 101. Like, the first stuff they ask you is like, do you have any outstanding debts or, you know, anything that someone could use to be like, hey, I got a little extra cash on the side.
Yeah.
But there's the scene, the Dilophosaurus, right? Is that the one that the so we used to have
not a real dinosaur, I believe, or at least doesn't have all of those capabilities.
What? We used to have this tree skirt at our, I think my parents still have it, and it had like kind of that frilly edge, not frilly like lace, but like kind of like pointed edge around the outside, and it has like the cut in it so that you can put it around the tree base.
Yeah.
and it was like red and green. And
so you were running around the house?
100%. And my dad would do it. Like everyone's like, you know, like the noise, like, oh, and then like doing the spitting noises.
Please make sure this is in your family Christmas card.
Oh, it should be. It should be.
When he says, he's such an idiot. He's like, let me throw you a stick. You want to play fetch? Like, whatever. Yeah. He says, I'm going to run you over when I come back down. Pure comedy gold. It's funny every single time. And I swear, when he slips on the way down and
there's the sound effect.
It's like I can't do like one of those things.
Yes, it's like a Tom and Jerry sound effect.
Guys, I think this is a good place for our brand new category, which you two do not know. Getting eaten by a dinosaur while sitting on a shitter award for worst movie death.
Gennaro, what a bum.
So here's the thing. Yeah. I thought about doing that category, and that'd be the funniest thing to name it, because obviously he was sitting on a shitter in very short shorts and his
in his linen jacket.
Might not even be like in the top three of worst death in this movie.
What kind
worst
of
how?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like
painful or
I think like painful in general terror. Like he's very scared, but I would think that it's lights off for him within seconds.
Yes, I think it is. The movie goes to great pains to establish that getting eaten by raptors is the worst way to die, because as Alan Grant tells a child, you are alive when they start to eat.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Which we
Justice
see.
For Robert Muldoon. Yeah. Robert Muldoon deserves so much better. He is the king. Although actually, do we then say, I guess it's a tie with him and Samuel Jackson.
And the guy in the crate to open the movie.
All right.
Because guy's terror. I'm factoring in terror, general terror too, because that guy is like fighting for his life for 30 seconds. And then like, I mean, listen, I like Muldoon, but like that grip was weak, son. You just let him go. And then he's gone.
Like, I think the advantage the people who die from raptors have is that like, they understand what they are up against. Gennaro, when he successfully abandons the children and flees to the toilet, he thinks he's good. Like, he thinks he's like out of sight. No, like,
it's not a terrible plan considering you don't expect Ian Malcolm to get out of the car and lead the T-Rex to you.
Yeah.
Like, yes, and like the construction on this fucking toilet facility, boy.
Tough.
Not great.
Tough.
Fell apart with a stiff breeze.
Definitely spared expense.
That was the big bad wolf blowing that thing down.
Yes. like watching a child open a particularly lightly wrapped birthday gift.
Yeah.
Oh, there it is. There he is.
Just sitting on the shitter.
Nedry has an argument for worse, though, because I think the one, I definitely don't want any like animal to spit venom into my face.
Yeah, it seems bad.
Hey, brave stance.
Yeah,
brave
I've been thinking a lot about speaking out about it, and I think this is the time to do that. I do not want an animal to spit blind.
Caroline Darty against venomous blindness.
Yes. Yeah. That's huge.
But
what this podcast stands for.
Then to get into, I think my dog's about to throw up.
Speaking of venomous.
Yeah, he's going to barf. And then for him to get into the Jeep and
get eaten.
Yeah.
I love the little switcheroo that the dinosaur did, though, where it's like, ooh, hold on while he's on the ground.
Yeah.
Like hops in the passenger seat.
Yeah. And I feel like that dinosaur would take longer to kill him than a velociraptor would. Like, I feel like Muldoon has like 20 to 30 seconds probably.
You're gonna pass out of
shock. Gennaro's dead instantly.
Come out.
Yeah. Either way, none of the deaths in this movie are very pleasant.
What if Sam Jackson isn't dead and he's just wandering around the island like bleeding a lot, missing an arm, and he's like, he's fuck guys, I just had a bad industrial accident. Nobody even came to find me. What the shit?
The dog did not throw up. We're very proud of him.
Okay, good job.
Again.
It's interesting that the raptors did not eat his arm. They were like, let's just place it up here. It's gonna scare her.
They were like, guys, I have a great prank.
It is a fun, it is a really good. Again, we like Ryan, you said, we don't get into the motivations of these. They're just animals. But for all intents and purposes, the raptors in this are serial killers. They're like Michael Myers. They're doing the same terror thing, the slow chases, the somehow finding a way to put the arm in a perfect place where it'll fall on Laura like during the clicking. Yeah, it's done very well. Like because the suspense, the terror of the T-Rex is the big time shock and awe, the raw brute force, that whole thing. And then they contrast it with the raptors, where it's like a quieter, more strategic hunt. And there's obviously like Chekhov's comment with Muldoon talking about how they hunt you, and they hunt you from the side and things like that. So we know these, like, they're not just raw brute force. They are hunters. They're going to be strategic about it. They are somehow going to struggle with two small children, but we'll get into that. But it's
outdoors.
Yeah, it's a good, it's a very good contrast of our multiple different fear type dinosaurs in this movie.
Yeah,
that's such a great moment too, where they do the like, yeah, everyone's safe unless they figured out how to operate door handles, whatever. Yeah. And then it cuts to them being like,
hey, you're doing the full honey, I'm home.
Yeah.
And somebody's like, oh, I knew I should have just got round door knobs instead of the push down ones.
Yes, actually my coworker Blake just sent me a video of his toddler reaching and like starting to touch the pull down handles. And he's like,
no,
and open. They figured out how to open doors.
That one's a problem. That's when you have to start getting the child proof doorknobs, which are also somewhat adult proof. Sometimes they are very difficult. Did anything not work in this movie? And when we say with a movie like this, we're just asking questions.
Caroline, do you have anything?
Lex annoys me. I'm sorry. I know that she's a kid, like, whatever. But, like, at some point, like, you just have to use... And we texted about this, and I was like, why would you get the flashlight out? And both of you parents were like, actually, believe that. But, like, just, I don't know, shut up. Like, don't scream really loud when things are happening. And, like, be... And by the way, as it goes on, she gets much more, like, she's not doing all that stuff. But, she definitely has moments early on where you're like, oh my god, girl, I got it together. But it's minuscule. Like, it's more of a character thing than, like, you know, real complaint.
I have a controversial thing that doesn't work.
Yes.
Tim should be dead. like I understand Steven Spielberg's
not even talking about the electrocution or the car. He's like, I hate that guy.
No, I just like, one thing that I think makes this movie satisfying is that it will kill characters, and it's not always who you think. Like, part of what makes the Sam Jackson death, like, or you know, we don't see the death, but the off-screen death satisfying is, like, you don't get a sense like, oh, he's definitely going to die. Same with Muldoon. Mm-hmm. It's not like, oh yeah, definitely. Like, there are real stakes, and you're sort of like, well, shit's crazy, so anybody is up for grabs here. And the decision to sort of like put Tim in the level of comedic danger and then be like, nah, he's fine, I think just like it feels like it undercuts things a little bit. It does do a thing where when you get to the kitchen scene, which is still very good, you know, like, oh, they're not in danger. They're not going to kill these.
If he has survived the car, if he has survived the electric fence, he is going to survive this kitchen.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
I think not only did he survive the electric fence, he woke up with jokes.
Yes. Yes. Like, he should, the therapy alone.
Yeah.
After this.
Yeah, this one for me, best time, worst time, very easy on this one.
Okay.
Because...
Kyle, what doesn't work for you?
So, I mean, this is classic Hollywood, but we've got a 20-year age gap between Sam Neill and Laura Dern in this one, and
I wouldn't have guessed it was that large.
It's 20 years, yeah. Sam Neill, 19 years. Sam Neill is 76. Laura Dern is 57.
Well, now don't lie to us.
okay.
It's not that it doesn't work, but it's just like you assume, regardless, he's older. Even for the sake of the movie, he's 10, 15 years older.
Yeah.
This doesn't seem like the hottest profession, to the point that when he met this, when he finds out Laura Dern is in his field, he's like, I have to lock this down no matter what. There will never be someone else who looks like this in my field.
Do you feel like the movie can't decide if it wants them to be like a couple?
Yes. it's insistent on saying he says they're together.
They weren't in the book, which is right. why the mm-hmm. age difference didn't matter, because he was a mentor. Like,
yes,
they were not dating, they were not together. It wasn't a thing. And so I almost think that they cast it and then made the decision that because also in the book, Sam Neill loved kids. Like, yeah. Dr. Grant, Alan Grant loved kids, not Sam Neill. Sam Neill's not in the book.
The book goes to great pains to talk about Sam Neill, the Australian actor.
Do they, in the movie, do they share any legitimate affection? She jumps into his arms when they finally reunite, but that's more of like a,
sure.
oh my God, you're still alive, I'm still alive.
They have little moments, like when they're at the dig site, they have yes. a few little moments where they're like putting their hands around each other's waist and she like calls him sweetie or honey or something.
And they
like
talk
that.
About kids, like yeah. having together. Like, yeah. he hates kids, they're the devil. And he's right. like, they're fun.
But it's like very light. It's yeah. not. I mean, this is a romantic couple that never kisses.
Yeah. Which, you know, good for them.
Which is fine. Yeah. It just sort of like, to me, it was like, when he tells Malcolm, like, yeah, we're together, I'm not sure that that's true. Like, that's what I mean. Like, I think she might be like, no, we're just in Montana and bored. So occasionally we fool around in the trailer.
We share the only trailer on this dig site. Like, what do you think's
yeah,
gonna happen?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that's.
Let's get into best scene. As yes. great as this movie is, I thought about this hard. I think I have a clear best scene. For me, it is always the first time you see the T-Rex. That is one of my favorite scenes ever.
The scene in the rain,
T-Rex.
What happened to the goat?
Into a T-Rex attacking the car.
And, goes over the light.
Yeah, and we get the first like T-Rex sound.
Where does he think he's going? When you gotta go, you gotta go.
It is one of yeah. like, it gives me the chills every time. It gives me the chills talking about it now. It is, again, because the T-Rex is this big, clunky animal, and they find a way to make it kind of sneak up on them in some ways and be like,
oh, 100%.
And be stealthy and scary. That's when we first start getting our first look at the, like the ripples of water, like in the cup.
Oh, that mm-hmm. is such mm-hmm. a great effect. Mm-hmm. Great effect. Yeah. The ripple mm-hmm. water, yeah. it's brilliant. Like, that is such a wonderful way to do
you
that.
You could name like, 10 more scenes, and I would say, yeah, sure. That's a great, great, fantastic scene, fantastic choice. But that is one of my favorite scenes of all time.
It's, yeah, I mean, in terms of really kicking off, like, we are in Act 2, and now things are happening.
Yeah.
It's really hard to beat that one. Especially because it ends in chaos.
Mm-hmm.
Like the whole group is split up and one of them's already dead and like things are just a fucking mess at like after one encounter. Yeah, that's a really good. I don't know that I could pick one that's significantly better than that.
I really like the first time they see the dinosaurs, like in
when
general,
they arrive.
When they're in the car and he turns head, because that's the other part that one, it's become such a like cultural touch point, I think, with the like that's when you hear the score. And I debated bringing this up too. Two of my all-time favorite like YouTube videos revolve around this scene. And so one is, you can look it up, it's called Jurassic Park Melodica.
I knew you were going to say that.
It's like the worst version of the scene played on the harmonica, melodica.
Yeah.
With it.
Yeah.
And the
yeah.
sweetest part about it, well, one, it ends and it's when he goes, they do move in herds. It's mm-hmm. perfect.
Mm-hmm.
But the person who posted it so earnestly in the like description was like, just got this new Melodica, let me know what you think. I pr-
promise you, if you Google it, watch it, you will not be disappointed. It is pure joy. The other one is someone like made up lyrics where it's like, holy fucking shit.
Fucking dinosaurs.
Yep. Jesus Christ, what the fuck?
Yeah.
That scene is so cool. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah.
Because imagine, and this is, I would like to think that I would choose differently, but if Jurassic Park existed, I'd go. I think I'd go.
I mean, there's a reason that in the sequels, the park ends up being successful for a time, because everyone would be
Jimmy
like,
Buffett's
I have
going,
to see, yeah,
you know?
if Jimmy Buffett's going to be there, everyone should be there.
You got to find the sweet spot when they deal with the first round of wrinkles, like, you know, small things. And then you find that little sweet spot in the middle where things are actually operating really well. And then you get out of there before they start getting too ambitious, introducing Or the dinosaurs get too smart and figure out how to get out of the cage.
The other scene I would throw in there, because like it's got so much good, it's moving between so many different characters and it's such an abrupt shift in tension, is when Laura Dern gets the power back on and immediately we go to like, nope, Velociraptor attack.
We're in a serial killer chase.
Yes. Like it is, that is, I feel bad saying this because you haven't, but like seeing that in a movie theater is wild. It's absolutely wild. And
the
like,
tension building of her turning on everything as well, when you know that they're on the fence.
Like, yes. There's exactly. Yeah. There's like, I forget. Like, I don't think Muldoon is dead yet. I think he's still.
No, he's not. He's still like outside, and then he gets jumped.
Right. So there's like everybody is in different places. We're talking like Hammond's back on the walkie-talkie, like talking her through it.
Yep.
And it's like just everything goes haywire at once. It's so good. It's such a good like buildup of tension, and then like releases it in this very satisfying way.
One of the things I noticed on this watch, I think for the first time, because it's always like, why did Sam Jackson just go alone? Like, he didn't take a gun. He didn't take anything. When Muldoon and Laura Dern are on the way, he goes, it must have knocked out like the raptor gates. Like, even Nedry knew not to knock out the raptor. So Sam Jackson left, assuming that the at least like the
have like a
that,
walk, in,
yeah,
the
walk in the park
go, yeah.
yes. perfect perfectly fine and was not fine, was he?
No.
I love the kitchen scene. I think that needs to get nominated here. I also love that going into the getting the control room back on board, like they're fighting at the door with the raptor, like all that, into the last like big, you know, as
the big set
banner falls, and all that. So it's hard to, they're all obviously separate scenes and all that, but it's such a cool I love it. It's so good. There's everything's so good, like the scene where they have the raptor being born, it's adorable. I'm sorry, it's so like, it's just like, it's now it feels weird.
Is it
also shout out BD Wong, by the way, who is I think the only actor that's in every single Jurassic Park movie.
Is he in all of them?
He's in three, that but cute.
I think he breaks bad in the Chris Pratt movies.
Yes. But BD Wong, what is he, in SVU?
Yeah.
Or
he's
regular
in
Law
SVU
Order.
Or regular Law and Order. I forget which one. Yeah.
He's fantastic. I love BD Wong. He was also in an episode of The X-Files. So
play the
music,
folks.
Is
there like a single wasted moment in this movie? Like, is there anything you'd cut? Because I don't think there is.
Not egregiously. Mm-hmm. Like the scene where they're in the tree and Lex gets sneezed on is a little bit like, oh, we're having fun for the kids. Like, do you need that scene? No. Is it crucial that like Lex learns the difference between a Vegisaurus
and a Metasaurus?
Like, no. Yes. Like that's not crucial. But like, it's a good way to show off your effects one more time. It's a good like little moment. It probably is in there more of a like, okay, we need like a moment of rest.
Yeah, we need to know what they're know what they're doing. Like, they're not just gonna they're not just gonna be up running around for 24 hours or 12 hours, whatever.
Yes.
Because even even where they go and get the amber and find the like mosquito in it, and they haven't explained it yet. Great scene.
perfect. It gives you kind of a little insight as to what they're doing.
It's it that also gives you a lot, because like I love that scene because first of all, Gennaro shows up to this fucking dig site in a suit.
Yes, on
the and it's like path. This immediately tells you so much about this character and how stupid he is. Yes. But he's also like, it does a good job of explaining like why we're doing all of this. That's where you get the explanation of like, they're gonna shut the park down because a person died, so we need people to go say that the park is okay.
Yeah.
And it's
And not only did a person die, he was unsavable. You had 20 guys with weapons and a person screaming to shoot this raptor, and there was no saving this man. Meaning that, like, there's no Harambe situation in this park. If a kid falls in the velociraptor pit, the kid's gone. It's just going to happen.
Absolutely donezo.
The book, incredible scene when they do it from the perspective of a doctor on an island close to Isla Nublar that gets brought the injured worker. And they talk about the like aggressiveness of the wound, and there's like this extra saliva thing that they point out, and like how it's unusual and how it looks like a tiger mauling, and like, but you know, blah blah blah. That's incredible. That's like so descriptive. And there's also a whole element in the book of the compies are a huge part of the book, where at the beginning of the book a little girl is bitten on a beach.
That is in Lost World.
Is that in Lost
World? No, in the movie Lost
World. Yeah, in the movie. Yeah. And there's such a cool, like, the picture, the drawing of, like, what the girl described as being faxed around, and a doctor is like, hey, who drew the dinosaur? And someone's like, that's not a dinosaur, that's a lizard that bit this girl. Like, whatever, it's good.
But no, I think, like, you could probably cut it, but, like, Caroline brought this up earlier, it's a barely 2-hour
movie. 2 hours and 6 minutes. Like, there's no real reason to cut anything, but it's paced so well.
And it's... Yes, it's paced well. It like layers the explanatory elements in. Like the character development all like happens as the story is moving. Like there's no real wasted movement here. It's really quibbling to point out that there is.
Yeah, I was looking at the quotes on IMDb, and one of them is Muldoon (parentheses) just before he gets attacked by a raptor. Clever girl.
It's a good
just
quote.
Just before.
It is a good quote.
Yeah. I have a sticker on the back of my sticker on the back of my computer that's a velociraptor, and it has like the little ribbon thing in front that says like clever girl.
How long have you had that sticker for?
4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
Okay. That tracks. What's the best quote in this movie, Caroline?
Probably the one about the scientists got so preoccupied with if they could, they didn't stop and think if they should. Mm. That's probably my favorite.
Yeah.
Don't you see the danger, John, inherent in what you're doing here? Genetic power is the most awesome force the planet's ever seen, but you wield it like a kid that's found his dad's gun.
It's hardly appropriate to start hurling generalizations.
If I may, I'll tell you the problem with the scientific power that you're using here. It didn't require any discipline to attain it. You know, you read what others had done, and you took the next step. You didn't earn the knowledge for yourselves, so you don't take any responsibility for it. You stood on the shoulders of geniuses to accomplish something as fast as you could, and before you even knew what you had, you patented it and packaged it and slapped it on a plastic lunchbox, and now you're selling it. You want to sell it. Well,
I don't think you're giving us our due credit. Our scientists have done things which nobody's ever done before.
Yeah, but your scientists were so preoccupied with whether or not they could, they didn't stop to think if they should.
I really like when Hammond is saying, like, when they opened Disneyland, nothing worked. And Malcolm says, yeah, but if the Pirates of the Caribbean breaks down, the pirates don't eat the tourists.
Also, I think honestly, all of the best lines are Malcolm.
Yeah, because there's the life finds a way one, you know, that whole thing. Yeah. And especially the way that Goldblum delivers them, that very eccentric, you know, Goldblum-y kind of thing that we've all grown very accustomed to.
Right. And now I'm sitting in a car talking to myself. That's chaos. That's
chaos. Yeah. Caroline, there was your line about dinosaurs eat man, woman inherits the earth.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Also good.
Yeah.
Those are all Bennett loves it. So
huge fan of this movie, Bennett Dog.
Yeah.
Most athletic moment in this movie. I actually have a strong contender. Two strong contenders. So Alan Grant in the when the T-Rex attacks is like rappelling down into the T-Rex pit. And yeah. Doing that with a kid on his back, choking him.
Yeah.
It's really impressive.
And has to grab a cable to avoid a fucking Jeep.
Yeah.
Falling on him.
Climbs the tree.
The other one, climbing, like speed climbing down from the Jeep in the tree.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's a pretty good one. Like, there's a lot. I mean, between those two and
catching Timmy's projectile body,
catching Timmy, just getting
the electric fence,
like getting over the fence in a speedily enough time, like a lot of upper body work going on, a lot of core work going on.
The group landing on the pieces of the fossil, and Lex catching herself, but that was actually fun fact. The trivia I know is there was a gymnast that was her body double that did that stunt.
Oh, okay.
But as a character, she gets credit for it.
She does. Okay. Yeah, Alan Grant doing a lot of P90X out on the dig site, just keeping that core deeply strong.
Yeah.
The Lenny Harris Pinch Hitter Award for Best Supporting Character.
This is tough.
So who's in it too much? Obviously Dern and Sam Neill.
And the kids.
The kids. John Hammond.
And Ian Malcolm, I would say, is also in it too much.
So that we say Nedry and Sam Jackson and Muldoon, like all the employees.
I think those are your primary candidates.
And Ryan's favorite, the driver of the Jeep from the
room. Sure, the driver of the Jeep.
And Dobson. Look at this guy right here.
I'll also throw in the annoying kid at the dig site.
Let me just fuck this kid up for life real quick.
like what I was watching when I was rewatching it, I was like, where are this kid's parents? This kid is being like, this kid is being a real asshole.
Yes.
And B, this kid is being terrorized. And like, nobody steps up and is like, that's my son. They're just like, nope, you're on your own, bud.
We used to be able to talk to kids. We used to be able to tell them things. Now they're all so soft. Can't even tell them that a velociraptor would eat them alive. We'd take back our country.
I would, gosh.
What about just Sam Jackson's cigarettes? Just them as a character. Because he is an incredible movie smoker, for one. And in this movie, there is that close-up of him burning a cigarette deep into the filter.
Yes.
Which 10 of 10 would not recommend.
I think, so Caroline, I don't remember if it was while we were recording, but Caroline mentioned that like she's always delighted when she's like, oh, Sam Jackson's in this. Part of why I think that is like, this is the least cool character Sam Jackson has played. Like, he's capable. He's not like, I don't know, but he's just like a guy. He's not written or played as like, oh man, he's so fucking cool. It's like, no, man, he's annoyed because he has to work with Nedry and he hates this hacking crap.
That's why he's smoking four packs a day. I think this cigarette smoking is the inspiration for Chappelle's Samuel L. Jackson beer when he's got beer cigarette just hanging off the slip.
Yeah.
Hold on to your butts is like one of the best. Like, he's so
that
good.
Man takes it seriously.
Hold on to your butts.
Yeah. That's probably the first time I've thought about the fact he could be talking about a cigarette butt.
I think Sam Jackson does the most with the least amount like he has no scenes with the dinosaur. His arm does, obviously, but like, considering he doesn't have a like oh shit scene, Sam Jackson is fucking crushing it in this.
Do you think he demanded that? Like, he's like, I refuse to be eaten on screen.
And then the producers, of Deep Blue Sea said, bet.
Or he didn't get to be eaten on screen in this one.
And
so
he demanded it.
I need a dramatic.
Yeah.
But there's something about Samuel L. Jackson where even when I watch Deep Blue Sea, I'm like, how's he going to get out of this? How does he solve that?
He's so inspirational.
I think it is Samuel L. Jackson. But Dennis Nedry.
Wayne Knight's awesome.
Wayne Knight's great.
Yeah.
Fantastic in this. Yeah. Like, It's a tough, it's between those two. And that's saying something because I love Muldoon as a character is like one of my all time favorite. Yeah. He's fantastic.
Muldoon is essential because he is the only person who doesn't underestimate any of these dinosaurs from the get-go.
Yeah.
He couldn't be less surprised that this is happening. It's also interesting that he took this job, but he couldn't be less surprised that this is happening.
He's also like, he's clearly terrified throughout this.
Rightfully. He's the only one who's probably rightfully terrified.
Yes. Like he is, there is a way you would write this or you're sort of like, well, he's going to be cocky and be like the Pete Postlethwaite character in the sequel is very much like, you know, I can control dinosaurs. Yes, exactly. That is not what Muldoon is having happen at all.
Like, I really like to not go outside when these things are remotely close to me. Yeah.
He is probably in like six-figure credit card debt and was just like, okay, I have to take this job. I understand this is a terrible idea. I'm going to stick this out. I'm going to wish for the best.
Uh-huh.
And, so, you know, sometimes you take risks that don't pan out.
Sure.
He was one of the, like, I think they describe him in the book as, like, one of the world's best game hunters or, like, game.
Yeah.
He certainly has that vibe. The hat says great big game hunter.
And perfect shorts.
Yeah, sure.
Like, he crushed it.
It's really funny. We don't know anything about him, but because of his mannerisms, how he dresses, how his, again, the rightful bit of respect he pays these dinosaurs as predators. Yeah, the reverence, especially to the raptors. We know everything we really need to know about him. We're very comfortable when he's escorting Laura Dern to the breakers.
Well, it's very telling when his first line in the movie is, they should all be destroyed.
Yes.
And it's about the Velociraptors.
Nihilist Jurassic Park employee.
He's fantastic.
Yeah.
Let's get into Defend the Villain. How many times did John Hammond get told this is a bad idea?
A billion. Every investor,
I think one of the biggest problems with the sequel, specifically like The Lost World, he would have no more money. He would have been sued into oblivion.
Mm-hmm.
Like he'd be living in a shack.
All right, I'll defend the villain. Nothing John Hammond does is malicious. It is careless and it is full of he's got way too much dip on his chip.
Yes. Way too much.
But he's not a malicious person. He is not like, and I don't think he's a callous person necessarily. He is way too driven by this dream of making it real.
Mm-hmm.
And Malcolm is right that he doesn't have like the appropriate level of respect for what he's done and what it means.
He's completely right with the, you didn't even stop to think if you should do this.
Right. But it is not motivated. I actually don't even think it's motivated by greed. Truly.
No, I don't think so either.
Nedry is working off of greed. I think this is just a guy who like is like, well, why wouldn't we try? Wouldn't it be cool? Shouldn't we?
He's also a guy who's older and probably thinking about legacy at some point. Like, how am I going to be remembered on this earth? And he wants it to be remembered as the guy who brought dinosaurs back. He is going to be remembered for that, but not quite how he was planning on. I also like that he's a guy who can stress eat out of a giant 3-gallon tin of tub of ice cream, which I'm glad they have.
Sure.
Well, he was saving it from the power going out. I just think it's like he legitimately does it because he wants to bring joy to kids. Like, and that's where you're kind of like, just stop and think for a second, pal. But he doesn't bring his grandchildren there because he's trying to get them hurt. Like, I wouldn't even call him like negligent in that way, but like maybe just by not thinking through things, like what's possibly wrong here?
Mm-hmm.
But to show people, like he wanted to show Dr. Sattler, Dr. Grant, Ian Malcolm, Gennaro, like, look how wonderful this is going to be for the youths. Like they're going to get to see all these cool things and the wonder and all that. And then it all went to shit.
He even says he doesn't want this park to be just for the ultra wealthy.
Yeah.
You know, actually thinking about that tub of ice cream. So they skedaddle. And then presumably the T-Rex is wandering around that building, comes across that giant tub of ice cream.
Yeah.
T-Rex's digestive system was not meant to handle that much ice cream.
no lactate was present in the Cretaceous period.
The sequel to this movie is the T-Rex just dying of the shits in that building.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
So gassy.
Because he gets all the cakes, too. Mm-hmm. Just, I mean, 65 million years of dietary evolution completely skipped by this T-Rex. Apple and it's like, here's some Bluebell. Enjoy. It's like the Victorian era child versus a cheesy gordita crunch. Oh, man. Yeah. Okay. The Peter Gallagher Award for the hottest person in this movie. Hottest person in this movie.
Believe it or not, those two texts were not related.
Uh-huh.
I am going Muldoon.
Love, I had a feeling.
I think so too.
Vibes. Love the vibes. Again, the shorts, perfect length. He's got the boots, the hat's working. Just, he is in control. Like, we love him. It's not a super sexy movie. I think Laura Dern is gorgeous. She was the other. And then young Caroline, 10-year-old Caroline, whatever, was like, what? My sister and I laughed for hours about Ian Malcolm and the lean and the glint. Mm-hmm.
You have to be into a certain type of person for Jeff Goldblum to be your guy, because he's played
to scratch your itch.
He's played roles where he's supposed to be like the suave lead.
He's a good looking man. It's preteen, a teen, that's not the vibe, that's not the look that you're like, you know, oh, it's so handsome. It's the same thing as like when we talked about While You Were Sleeping and Bill Pullman. Like, when I first saw that when I was 13 or whatever, you're not like, look at that sexy babe, but like as an adult you're like, I would like to get dinner with this man. I would say yes. like you can see Ian Malcolm was successful. Like, you could understand that Ian Malcolm was successful in meeting women and getting married and having kids.
And getting divorced.
And getting divorced. You could see all of the whole life cycle.
Yeah.
I would say it's, I don't know if he's considered a hot person, but like, it's jarring seeing adult Joseph Mazzello and stuff and being like, oh, that was the little kid from Jurassic Park.
He grew up and fought for our country in the Pacific.
He did. And destroyed our country by being a founder of Facebook and the social network. Joseph Mazzello giveth and Joseph Mazzello taketh away, really, in his work.
I think that's one of the reasons that the first couple times I saw the Pacific, it was hard for me to like really get into, is because I'm like, I am so sorry. You are a good actor, but you are the kid from Jurassic
Park. You are locked into this role.
Yeah. Like, and it's real tough. I hate doing that to people because I know, and it wasn't even, usually that happens when you are like in a series or like, you know,
when
like
your uncle.
Daniel Radcliffe is Harry Potter. Like, it's real hard. And he's, again, a good actor. He's taken on some really, I love that he just does whatever projects he wants to now. Like, if you saw Lost City, loved it. Completely nonsense. But Joseph Mazzello, I'm just like, you were the kid from Jurassic Park. Like, I don't know what to do with this.
When the Pacific also has a reverse version of that, where at the first time I saw it, it was like, oh, this actor playing the mega Cajun Marine is really interesting. And then now it's like, man, Rami Malek is just a weird guy. Of course he took this role. It makes a whole lot of sense now.
It's such a weird cat. Super weird.
Congrats to him for his one scene in Oppenheimer.
I think that the other main guy, the author, the writer in the Pacific,
Eugene is Joseph Mazzello. It's the guy, he's in The Departed, he's in a bunch of stuff. I can't remember his name.
Marky Mark.
Of course.
James Badge.
Yeah, James Badge Dale. I love James Badge Dale.
Do you know what else he is in that I'm currently watching?
He's in 24.
He is dating Kim Bauer and works. He's Jack's partner, field agent, who finds out that he's doing heroin.
Jack Bauer would not have hesitated to shoot all these dinosaurs.
Until you shoot first, ask questions later for Jack Bauer.
they're like, Jack, that wasn't even a dinosaur. That was a goat.
Doesn't matter.
What happened to the goat? Jack Bauer shot it.
It's so funny.
Best time, worst time. This could be one of the ones where no one has a good time, except for like the T-Rex. Raptors. T-Rex and the Raptors.
T-Rex has the best time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, T-Rex wins.
T-Rex gets to hunt. T-Rex gets to stretch her legs a little bit. T-Rex gets to throw a raptor into a fucking fossil display.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
T-Rex gets to roar. T-Rex is having a great time.
Yeah.
T-Rex had a blast.
Yeah.
I got to eat someone off the toilet.
T-Rex had to eat someone off the toilet. Yeah. Like, T-Rex got
perfect
to
meal.
Throw a car.
Toss some cars around. Man, T-Rex was basically like, give a 3-year-old a pixie stick and watch him just go to work.
Yes.
Vibe it so hard, the T-Rex.
I really do think worst time is Tim. Like,
oh, the therapy that these kids are going to need is
he had a
out of control.
Terrible day.
Yes.
He met his idol who wanted nothing to do with him. Like,
but he bonded with him, though.
He did bond with him.
He's got that.
After all the trauma, he got almost squished in the car. Then the car gets thrown into a tree. He survives that, gets out of the tree, has to race down the tree, almost dies again. Then they go through the whole thing. He gets electrocuted, almost gets eaten by raptors. Like, he just had a real day of it. Like, every single, like, outside of Ellie had a tough time.
John Hammond had his life's dream destroyed in 24 hours.
It's deserved, but like, it all goes to shit so quickly.
Yeah. Yes, that's true.
Yeah, because he's so jolly and optimistic at the beginning of this movie, and then you see him, the last shot of him is on the chopper just staring at this bug that is now it enclosed in amber, which is now the source of billions of dollars in lawsuits.
Yep.
Tough. The Keith Morrison Dateline episode from this movie.
Don't make it about a sexy raptor. Don't do it.
I knew I shouldn't have said anything.
I agree.
I wish I could go back to time.
I was just like, you know what? We'll tease this out of Caroline. It'll be fun. We'll
be a funny
about
thing.
It.
It's going to be like Richard Attenborough is kind of yep. good looking. Nope.
Uh-huh.
Nope.
Just next time you watch it, you'll be like,
but you know what? You've taught me a valuable lesson. Next time you're like, oh, I have a weird thought, but I don't think I want to share it. I'm not going to ask.
Yeah.
I'm not.
Oh, man. Okay. They thought it was going to be a fun trip to Costa Rica. Invited by a rich billionaire for mysterious reasons. Suddenly, everything started going wrong. People disappearing. People being eaten off of toilets. Were those dinosaurs? Find out if the park actually made it tonight on Dateline.
I would pay good money to hear Keith Morrison say people being eaten off of toilets.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, man.
Okay, roster moves. Who are we swapping out with Air Bud? The Raptors all being Air Buds would be hilarious.
Jeff Goldblum. Air Bud laying on the table. Like.
I would like Dotson being Air Bud. trying to commit espionage.
You got a badass.
And bringing the Barbasol quarters of $1 million and a Barbasol can to Dennis Nedry.
Hey guys, it's Air Bud. Yeah. It's Air Bud. See, nobody cares.
Nobody cares. Don't be cheap on the Air Bud.
That is the correct answer. Yeah. That is correct.
The big chill moment in this movie, I have already said mine in really two, both the T-Rex, the first time we hear the big roar, and then at the end when the banner falls down on him, definitely by design to be a big chill moment.
Yeah.
I think another emotional beat of the movie is, well, I'll throw in the first time they see the dinosaurs again, because I think that's a huge moment. Like, At that point, you have an idea. I mean, I don't have to watch the trailer. I'm sure the trailer says they're dinosaurs. But if you go into it, like, not knowing a single thing about this movie, like, you might still not know what exactly they're going to be looking at. But there's a great emotional beat when they meet the Triceratops. And, like, childlike wonder and awe that they approach this thing that they have been studying for decades and digging up million-year-old bones, and now they're touching a living, breathing version of it. I think it's such a cool, like, and she has the tear come down. It's just such a cool moment. Like, I've always loved that scene. It's so touching to me. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Then they dig through a big pile of shit.
That is big pile of shit.
when they get to the island too, when John Hammond's like, there it is, and we hear the score hit for the first time, we hear that theme hit. That's a big moment. They don't even see any dinosaurs at that moment, but it's like the score is so impressive that, incredible stuff. Last category that is kind of moot, before more restore, prequel, sequel, or remake. So we have seen a bunch of sequels. I would guess that this franchise will continue to get milk because I think all the sequels, despite being kind of critically panned, have all been very successful. I don't think they're going to give...
Yeah, like money-wise?
Money-wise, yeah.
Yeah.
Literally the only thing that matters at this point.
How do they find a way to get Glenn Powell in one of these?
I mean, money. The financials. they call his agent and they say, Glenn, how would you like to make $20 million?
All right, let's see. looking over them, worldwide box office... Jurassic World and Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom have made the most money, although obviously that's not inflation adjusted. And then it's Jurassic Park, then it's Jurassic World Dominion, which I think was the most recent one.
More about bugs than it was about dinosaurs, if you haven't seen it.
All of these made at least $1 billion in worldwide box office.
Unreal. Even the newest one?
Yes. Yeah.
It's such a that's such a layup of like, oh, we're gonna go to the movies and we're gonna see the new Jurassic Park. It's already PG-13. You can bring your kids. Like, let's
yeah.
go.
Yeah. Jurassic Park 3 is the one dud, I guess you would say. Like Jurassic Lost World made $618 million. Jurassic Park 3 only made 365, but still, like,
I bet whatever Jurassic
that's
Park
an enormously
3,
profitable movie.
Yeah, opened against was a lot stronger than whatever all these other movies opening, like all the Chris Pratt movies right. open against.
Yeah, yeah, you're probably right.
That's the one with William H. Macy and Taya Leone.
It is.
What a
it is.
Time capsule of.
So here's what was at the movie theaters. The Friday that Jurassic Park 3 came out, it was released on a Wednesday. We're going to go with the Friday. It was number one at the box office. America's Sweethearts, which I have definitely seen. Legally Blonde.
Oh, wow. That movie is incredibly successful.
The Score, which is a pretty good movie. Cats and Dogs, which must be some animated thing. I don't know.
So when we're talking about movies that we saw in theaters.
Uh-huh.
I saw Cats and Dogs in theaters.
Is it what is it?
It's like it was a kids movie.
Oh, it is anime.
I think it was 10. Okay.
And then number six on the list, The Fast and the Furious.
Ooh, buddy.
Nice.
How have those two franchises not crossed over at this point?
I wouldn't rule out that happening.
Jeff Goldblum does a voice in Cats and Dogs.
Oh, I love
that. Alec Baldwin and Tobey Maguire are the two leads. So
I can't believe that we don't have Jurassic and the Furious.
Where they go back in time.
Yes. Like Dominique Toretto and Ludacris and Tyrese hit a wormhole and they're back with their race cars.
These are all Universal properties, right? So you could just like be like, oh, we've ended up on the Jurassic Park island somehow.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you can make
Jason,
that.
Jason Statham is trapped on Jurassic Park island and we have to rescue him.
No one. And he's like, no one needs to rescue me. No. I'm getting off.
They're doing Jurassic Park 4 is what they're calling it for 2025. Yeah. And Gareth Edwards is directing it.
That has my attention.
Rogue One. Theater. Yeah. So there's no cast listed. So I'm still alive there.
I'm still I'm mostly just like I don't need more. I think as somebody who, like Caroline, read a lot of Michael Crichton books when I was like a preteen and a teen, I didn't need, like, they were good self-contained things. Part of what I enjoyed about them was like you get to the end and you're just like, that story is done. I didn't need them to be serialized. And I just don't need this to be serialized either. I'm a simple man.
I think it's pretty telling. Spielberg did not direct The Lost World, right? He was like, I'm good.
I think he maybe was like EP on it or something.
Yeah, but they would have given him the bag to be on that. I think it's pretty. Yeah, he did direct that. Wow.
He did. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he's out after that.
Yeah. Wow. Interesting vibes. He seems to do this with Jurassic Park movies. He did The Lost World in 97, and then he did Amistad also in
97. Sure.
This man's IMDb is fucking incredible. Like
we haven't even talked about Tiny Toon Adventures.
Of course we have.
What are his most important contributions to American culture?
War of the Worlds, which I liked. Mm-hmm. Minority Report.
Report, one of the most underrated movies in my opinion. Yeah. I absolutely love that movie. Did I tell you about my experience watching War of the Worlds? I think I told him, didn't I? Because I hated it. And I can't remember. I need to go back and watch it again. But I saw it in a theater in Japan when I was on summer cruise, for training. And it was on base. We saw it on base. But the woman sitting next to me the entire movie was like, oh my God. Oh my God. That little girl. Oh my God. Like the whole time, the whole movie. And I was like, oh my God, I'm going to punch you. Like it's all, but of course I was like 20 years old. I'm not saying anything to like a grown adult on base, whatever. And so that's all I hear that title and I'm like, oh my God.
Tim Robbins in that movie is not the guy you want in your foxhole.
No.
That's tough. No. Yeah, man. I'm fairly certain Steven Spielberg is a billionaire.
Oh, he has to be.
I mean, the number.
Yeah.
He
the stuff he has worked on.
Yeah. Also like he directed The Adventures of Tintin. And the BFG, the big fucking giant.
Love the Adventures of Tintin.
Adventures of Tintin is really good.
What did you call the BFG?
The big fucking giant.
You heard him.
That's not what that stands for.
You sure?
It's a big friendly giant.
Yeah, I mean, this will not, I can definitively say this will not be the last Steven Spielberg movie. What Steven Spielberg movie is next, Caroline? What would be your next Steven Spielberg movie you want to do?
I'm sorry, I'm just stuck on the fact that one of the only other things that the woman who played Lex was in was The Lost World, and then a few random things, and then Tremors 3.
Uh-huh.
Mindy Sterngood.
Yeah.
I would love to do Minority Report.
Have you not done Catch Me If You Can?
No, never.
That surprises me.
Yeah. Haven't done it.
I also
fraud is sports.
Yeah.
Fraud
oh, for sport. Sure. Yeah. For the
I would absolutely do E. I would do E.T. in 2 seconds. I love that movie.
My little sister was obsessed with E.T. as a child.
My sister and I will still hand each other like Reese's Pieces. Like
yeah, sure.
Yeah. Like weird hand thing. And that is actually one of my favorite Twitter memes where he's like, I don't know, but all I can tell you is my friends and I would have killed E.T. with a hammer.
We would have beat him to death with hammers, yes.
Well, anyways,
don't do Ready Player One.
No,
don't
no. Join us next week for the Schindler's List episode of Big Screen Sports. Ryan, where can the people follow you?
At Celebrity Hot Tub on Twitter, Blue Sky, Instagram.
Blue Sky's a thing, so.
Yeah, you know, whatever.
On there, I keep forgetting it.
You gotta say all the things.
Caroline.
I guess it's that on Threads, too.
Where can people send you pictures of hot velociraptors?
Local velociraptors want to meet you.
Claws and bio.
Oh, my God.
So at CW Darnie on all of the things. And, like, it's a handsome dinosaur. It's all I'm saying. I'm gonna stick by it. Listen to For the Water Cooler every Wednesday, new episodes.
Are you gonna tell Matt that you said this?
Probably.
Okay, good. I really want to know his reaction.
Man, what an episode. Truly what an episode. If you enjoyed this episode of Big Screen Sports, please subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Rate and leave a review. Catch us back next week with another great episode talking about hot dinosaurs. We'll catch you then. Thanks for listening.